Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to take you behind the scenes in Smash Mouth.
Cuts across, he scores!
This is the Preds Official Podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
Powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Predators Official Podcast. Welcome in here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Brooks Bratton, Thomas Willis, NashvillePredators.com, Ginger Duo, Calvin Smith, local hero behind the board. Episode 83. Have you guessed the two Predators players who wore number 83?
1 week later. I got so excited because we talked about that last episode that I was working on the website, and I thought we'd already done episode 83, so I'd put down episode 84. And then I was like, wait, no, that's not right. So
No. So,
speaking of,
drumroll please, if you didn't find the time to go to NashvillePredators.com/what is it?
Who knows? It's under the team section. There's an all-time numerical roster or jersey numbers.
Yeah. Anthony Boteto wore 83. It was his first number before he switched to 2. And then Vernon Fiddler.
Inversing 38.
Inverse.
At the time, Victor Arvidsson was 38 when he was traded for.
When Vern Fiddler was acquired by the Predators back in 2017, he switched to 83.
Corporate synergy here. Speaking of, Golden Classics on Fox Sports Tennessee coming up every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. The entire 2017 playoff run to the Stanley Cup final will be re-aired. Just the good parts, though. The 14 victories by your Nashville Predators, including a game winner from Vern Fiddler in game one of the St. Louis Blues round two series. So
5-0. And then the next day, the boys went to the Cardinals game and were all over Sportsnet waving at the Blue Jays. Remember?
Forgot about that.
Because PK was there.
We were watching them on our TV in our hotel room. Thanks, PK. We weren't invited, but
we didn't get the box seats.
Yes. That reminds me, this was really getting off the rails early, but we stayed at Union Station, right? And I had like been there years ago, and that was at the point when like there was a mall like in the back of Union Station.
Yeah.
And so we were separated from where the team was staying because we had just so many people traveling for the playoffs. Normally we're in the same spot. And I was like, hey, Brightside, like we're going to eat like kings. We're going to be able to shop. And then and apparently it had been closed down for years. Yeah. And then we look in the back and I'm like, oh, it's not a mall at Union Station anymore. And that was about it.
And not only was the mall closed, and no offense to anybody who's involved in this, you are way smarter than I will ever be, but there was also like a high school robotics convention going on.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And I mean, just crawling with teenagers.
I can't even get on the elevator. There's robots and teenagers just everywhere.
You're so much smarter than me.
Where like they think they should wear deodorant, but they don't really know for sure yet.
Yes.
That's tough.
They're probably saving the world right now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Back then.
three whole years ago. Now that they have their driver's license.
Hey,
watch out. What
do we want to talk about?
Oh, great.
So we're 6 full weeks into the pause.
Actually, perhaps our biggest update as far as the pause to the initial season, probably since we went on pause on March the 12th.
Exactly. Lots to tell you about there in a moment. You're going to hear from Rocco Grimaldi. We got to speak to him earlier in the week. Great to talk to Rocco. Also, an interview coming up with Predators defenseman Dante Fabbro, the first player we have been able to chat with since the pause, so looking forward to talking to him.
And we have not recorded it yet, so we cannot put our stamp of approval on. It might be terrible.
We're not sure how it's going to go.
President Brooks and Thomas don't know. By the time we post it, we will know. So
usually we can be like, oh, you guys.
Awesome episode. Awesome conversation.
We don't know.
Can't say for sure. Hope Dante steps it up.
We'll try. And then we're going to talk about, could Philip Tomasino compete for a roster spot next season? Some word on that, a couple of Twitter questions as well. But as we said, 6 full weeks into the pause of the 2019-20 NHL season. And Thomas, as you said, certainly what I would say, the most important update, the greatest amount of detail we have received to this point about what a potential resumption to the season could look like. So NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman spoke with Ron McLean of Sportsnet earlier in the week. And these rumors had leaked out the day that this chat happened. So maybe this was planned, maybe it wasn't. But people started saying, hey, maybe the NHL is considering host cities, if you will. So Gary Bettman tells Ron McLean that as many as four NHL arenas could host three games each per day without fans in one of the scenarios that the league is considering to finish the season. So they have also floated, in addition to that, the idea has been floated to NHL general managers of holding the 2020 NHL draft, which was originally scheduled to take place in Montreal my birthday weekend, June 26th, 27th. They have floated the idea of still having that in June before the season ends, which would be a complete 180 of what usually happens. Obviously, you finalize the order after everything has been won, everything has been complete. That's a whole nother caveat to get into. So, but I think this is interesting, and we had mentioned this as well. The NHL has decided against playing in non-NHL arenas and neutral sites simply because of the fact that NHL buildings are already set up and ready to go. They have everything you need. If you were to go into a rink in North Dakota or New Hampshire somewhere, you've got to figure it out. You've got to get broadcast settings and
yes,
team facilities
you
ready
need
to
that
go.
NHL minimum, effectively, even if you might have the number of ice sheets, like the workout rooms, the locker rooms, just the sheer space. Again, yeah, a high school hockey team is okay with squeezing into a very small locker room.
Yeah.
An NHL team has, you know, greater needs that they require than just an average team. So yeah, I think that makes sense as well, because there are enough areas around the country that include NHL cities and markets that have not felt some of the effects of COVID-19 that others have, at least as it comes as far as a number of cases.
Yes. So do not expect any trips to North Dakota or any of the less populated areas that have been considered at this
bummer
point.
Bummer for me, because that was the only way I was ever going to get to North Dakota to check that state off my list. So
I have actually been. I've flown into Minot a couple times. It's a lovely six-gate airport. Commissioner Bettman also had, we'll get to that story later. Commissioner Bettman has also stressed that the number of cities and locations have not been decided. The NHL is modeling to make sure it's prepared for any and every single possibility. And I did want to read this quote from the commissioner. He said, quote, "The decision ultimately will be made by medical people and people who are in governments at all different levels. So we're not going to try and do anything that flies in the face of what we're being told is appropriate. But clearly, we can play into the summer. Clearly, we can play next season, which we intend to do in its entirety, starting later. And so with a lot of timing options, we have a great deal of flexibility, and we're not going to rush anything. We're not going to do anything that's crazy. We're going to try and do something under the circumstances at the time that is sensible," end quote.
So that's big. It's big on a lot of levels. And again, the commissioner just made it, but we make it one more time. There's not going to be a rash decision that's made. Again, the CDC, other government officials will have a ruling on when the league comes back. It's not as if it's just going to happen rashly and say, you know, cross our fingers, hope it works out. But yeah, and I think one other thing from the comments that maybe you didn't touch on too much was the NHL one more time reiterated how much they want to play the regular season as well. And I think, and maybe we will be right, but a lot of us as podcast hosts and sports journalists were like, please, there's no way that they can do that. It doesn't make sense. Why are you involving these other teams that aren't going to make the postseason anyway? And the league has one more time said, quit assuming what we're going to do. Like, they still want to have it be, and I get this point, they still wanted to have it be as fair as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And the prime example would be, from a Predators perspective, the Winnipeg Jets are, in air quotes, in the playoffs right now. They're ahead of the Predators in the standings because they've played two more games. So if you were to do points percentage, you know, again, points acquired based on the number of games you've played, the Preds have played 69, the Jets have played 71, the Preds would be ahead of the Jets, and so would the Canucks, and the Jets would be out of the playoffs, even though, again, they're in the playoffs. So especially in that specific instance, how frustrating would that be as a player and as a team and organization? So I think that's why the league doesn't want to have to use a technicality, if you will, and wants to be able to say, even if it's not 82, well, you guys all played 76 games and these were the standings, or you all played 74. Like, we do apologize that maybe the road and home didn't work out evenly, or maybe the matchups didn't work out evenly, but at least you can't argue, hey, we actually were ahead of someone. You know, I don't care if we got that unjustly, because the Jets' counter to that is, well, yeah, but what if the Preds lose those two games? Then we would be in the playoffs. Why did they get to assume they would have won or acquired more points? So, again, sorry, that's one big thing for me, that the regular season is still involved. And yeah, again, just kind of more affirmation. I think we spoke on this in the last couple episodes. Seems like there's a great desire to go ahead without fans in arenas from a safety measure. I would assume the media is probably limited in some capacity as well, but just most likely unprecedented access when it comes to TV and all the streaming, and who knows, will post-game conferences be held over Zoom calls like we just saw this week with the NFL draft? I mean, I think that world has evolved so much that it's going to look very different. And again, just remind yourself, if you're like, well, darn, I want to be there. I mean, of course we all do. Even if you're a season ticket holder of a team, you still only go to 50% of the games. 50% of the time you're watching on TV anyway.
Yeah.
So just to be able to award it in this interim with the hope that next season can be more normal, I think that would be ideal.
Well, and just from the standpoint of being a fan, if this does come to fruition, how amazing would it be to have three games back to back?
Incredible. And then the assumption would be the NBA has remained silent on this topic, but would they come back very similar in the same way? What about the MLB? Could they go play in Arizona? I've seen that rumor. I'm not reporting that. I'm not an MLB reporter. But anyways, like all of a sudden to get sports back and to be able to watch them all the time on TV, I mean, how awesome would that be? So, a lot of affirmation from the league and a lot of openness from the league. That's appreciative. I was trying to think back to this. Maybe you can remember this. I was only a newer hockey fan, really, in the 2004-2005 lockout. I remember Gary Bettman giving pretty regular updates, but I just don't even know if he was this forthcoming of like basically every day saying, hey, you guys heard a rumor, or hey, you heard this. Here is the latest update. I want to be as transparent with you as I can.
Yeah, they've been really forthcoming with all of this. And I know I was in eighth grade at the time, so I wasn't following it necessarily nearly as closely as I would have been as an adult back in 2004-2005. But as you said, they've been really forthcoming. And I think that's been really nice to have that transparency. And they're not going to come out and say, yes, here's exactly where we're going to go and exactly who's going to be there. But it's been great to have this clarity, and I think that's this whole process, whether you're just looking at it from an NHL standpoint or a normal life standpoint, there's so many questions and nobody really has firm answers. I think that's one of the more frustrating things, but also one of the more enticing and interesting things to talk about is what could we possibly do? We've never been in this situation before. All of these different things that we could potentially look at. So as we said, certainly quite an impressive update there, and one that will undoubtedly be followed in the weeks and months to come to see if things come to fruition. Before we get out of this segment, I did want to play a clip as well. We had a chance to talk to Rocco Grimaldi on Thursday. Always good to chat with him. We've had him on the program a couple times, so all you loyal listeners know what Rocco was all about. But he had a hopeful message for Preds fans and people everywhere, honestly, that are maybe dealing with some issues during this time. Life has changed and maybe going through some tough items. And Rocco had a message that he wanted to get out.
First off, thank you guys for just how good you've been to me and to Abby and to my family. And you guys have been really awesome just supporting me on the ice and off the ice. So appreciate the messages. I see a lot of them. Obviously, I can't respond to many, but appreciate all that. And honestly, this is a time unlike anything we've ever seen. And I said it earlier, but hopefully we don't have to go through anything like this again. But, I just touch on it again, but I honestly feel for you people who are going through like really tough times, whether you're have lost a loved one or you're battling with the virus yourself, or, you're not sure where your next paycheck's going to come from, or you're going to be able to pay rent. I feel for you guys. And just want you to know that this time will end. There's a time and a season for everything. And life's going to hit us with some good stuff. Life's going to hit us with some bad stuff. And obviously, like I said, I can't relate to, losing a job or wondering when the next paycheck's going to be. And I can't relate on that sense. But, I can relate to a lot of lows in my life and wondering what's going to happen next. I mean, even a couple of years ago, wondering if I even wanted to keep playing hockey just because of how many times I was pushed down. So just want to say, like, the sun is rising. It's just over the hill. I know you can't see it right now because the hill is in the way, but the sun's rising. And just keep the faith, keep going through this. And like I said, use this time to keep growing. Maybe something happened where something is lost in this time, and maybe you're going to find something even better in this time. Be creative, watch things on YouTube, learn things, do new things. For me, I'm trying to learn, just in my craft in hockey, I'm trying to learn different ways to score. I'm trying to learn different things. And I know I can't physically work on them, but mentally I can work on them and I can watch and I can try to learn. So, maybe this can be good for somebody. I mean, maybe something is lost, but something even better can be earned.
we say so often that these are unprecedented in times. We've never done this before. And I think Rocco's got a great point. We've never done this before. So do something you've never done before. I mean, make it unique. Make it worthwhile. Don't just waste this time. I know I've shared in the past just getting to spend more time with my daughter, but I am also reading a book right now. I can't tell you the last time I did that. You know, small things like that. So, you know, study online, learn a class, learn how to make a new meal. You know, like a shout out to Rocco as well. Said he read the Bible in 23 days, mm-hmm. which is insane. So to be able to pull that off in that amount of time. So, yeah, like I appreciate his point. I really did. Of saying, like, you know, don't just look at this negatively. Yes, it's never happened before, but maybe it's never happened before and we can make something good out of it. And a final thought to leave you on. And yes, to those who have said that this is one of my drinking games that I say, oh, just one quick thing, and then I talk for 2 minutes. I hear you, but I'll try to do it this time. Also remember that if the NHL is to return in these special environments, that the world ideally is getting better around them as well. So it's not, in a sense, right? Like you go to a city and you have these teams in a special place and you just knock out one round of the playoffs. In those 2 weeks, things have gotten better as well. So it's not as if you need to solve the whole problem in just one solution. There.
You did it.
I did
it. A dose of inspiration from Rocco and a fulfillment there from Thomas. Well done from all parties involved. Segment one, we're coming to a close. We got Dante on the line coming up. We will chat with Predators defenseman Dante Fabbro in just a moment. This is the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Predators official podcast back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brooks Bratton, Thomas Willis, now pleased to be joined by a gentleman who we normally interact with a whole lot. Haven't seen him in 6 weeks, though, so it's good to have him on the phone now. Predators defenseman Dante Fabbro. Dante, welcome back to the POP. How are you?
Good, good. How are you? How are you guys holding up?
Oh, we're hanging in there as well as anyone could, working from home and trying to keep NashvillePredators.com afloat as best we can, I suppose. How are things? You're back at home in Vancouver, correct?
I am, yeah. I came, like you had said, I came back probably a week after we were in Toronto there and came back home, just been settling in and had a quarantine for 2 weeks as soon as I got back. And then ever since then, I've been able to obviously work out and kind of do my own thing, but it's been pretty boring to say the least.
Well, on that note, TV, movies, books, I mean, what have you tried to combat some of the boredom with while you stayed in quarantine?
Have you watched Tiger King?
Oh dear.
Pardon me?
Have you watched Tiger King?
I did. I watched the Tiger King. I started Money Heist.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys seen that. Great good show to watch. Yeah, I've been just lots of puzzles and just anything, honestly, to keep myself busy. Bike rides, rollerblading, and anything outside is definitely a positive for sure.
I've seen a lot of guys doing rollerblading, and we talked to Rocco a couple days ago, and he said his parents actually sent him his rollerblades, and he's been doing that. Does that feel like skating, or is that as close as you can replicate to being on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably as close as you're going to get. I mean, Vancouver itself, I think, even if you head downtown, we got a big seawall, down on the water there. So you can rollerblade around that thing and, takes you a good 45 minutes and it's a good sweat and just, to get outside. And it's obviously a pretty, beautiful city. So to get to be around in nature and whatnot, but, it's just weird. You go down there and it's just like, it's almost like a ghost town and, you're so used to seeing a bunch of people out and being active and everyone's just kind of, you know, huddled up on the couch or inside their homes, and it's just an eerie feeling, kind of.
I want to backtrack to the Tiger King, actually, because it's a very polarizing topic. David Poile said he watched 15 minutes of it and still regrets it, so I want to hear your opinion on the series as a whole.
I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of it. I was trying to get into it because all my buddies had watched it and they're telling me how funny it was and crazy it was. And so I started watching it and I just couldn't get into it. I just wasn't really interested in, you know, what was going on there. But I've been absolutely obsessed with Money Heist right now. I can't, my eyes are glued to the TV right now.
All right. Give us the 10-second pitch on that then, because I haven't seen that either.
Money Heist?
Yeah.
It's voiced over in English, so it's a Spanish show, but voiced over in English. and pretty much they just rob banks. It's like the whole moral of the show. So
nice. Okay. And then I'm curious too on puzzles, because I know that you had we had seen a video that you were actually asking for some recommendations on some puzzles. So have you always been a puzzle guy, or is this something new that you've picked up?
You know what, my family always threw out a puzzle for Christmas, and we'd have our big Christmas dinners with everyone, and you know, everyone would just kind of look at it, do a couple pieces here and there throughout the night, and so we have put puzzles out in the past, but I think here it's definitely taken it to the next level, and I ordered some not too long ago, some 3D puzzles, so they're like they're foam pieces, but you have to actually build a structure. So it's kind of like Lego in a sense, but it's not Lego. It's a puzzle piece.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, we had some of that growing up. I think we had like the White House and some other Washington, D.C. monuments, fancy. That sort of thing. Yeah, yeah. We're speaking with Dante Fabro, Preds defenseman, here on the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Dante, I guess you're right at about the 82-game mark in your whole career in the NHL, this being your first full season after coming in late last season. So what have you thought overall, if you can even remember back to when we were playing hockey, and maybe what has been some of the biggest differences you've noticed between the NHL and playing in college?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, what sticks out the most is definitely the schedule and the constant games and practicing and whatnot, and which I really enjoyed, honestly, because I know in college we only played on the weekends, the odd weekday, and you know, I find with having this kind of schedule, you know, maybe if you have a bad game one day, then you know, 2 days later you can get right back at it, you know, obviously trying to put a better performance on, and but I mean, I obviously towards the end it was you could definitely feel it on the body, and but I thought overall it was a great year, great learning year, and just kind of use that year to develop. I mean, didn't hit many of my goals, but I learned a lot from all the team, and the guys around in the locker room has been awesome for me, and you know, I can't really say enough about how fun this year was for me.
So I want to go back, Dante, to a moment from December on Long Island. It was an 8-3 win for your club against the Islanders, but you and your good friend Matt Barzal received matching minors, you for a high stick, Barzal for a hold. I'm curious, because I know that if I was in that situation and I was going against Thomas on the ice, I would be poking and prodding and doing everything I could. Like, is it so in that moment, are you like, hey, there's Matt Barzal, like, I'm going to try to, you know, get under your skin a little bit? Or what is that like in that moment? What's it like to play against a friend like that? And then is there any conversation after the fact that you're both down on the ice rolling around and all of a sudden you're going to the box together?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely crosses your mind. I think that one play was a little bit, I got tangled up with him coming up the wall, and just the way how we both unfolded out of that hit was, we ended up both getting penalties, and I don't know if the ref was looking for something or whatnot, but it just worked out to be him. And getting into the box, like, I looked at him, you can't help but not kind of laugh at him. And but it was kind of just a funny thing. My parents actually have a photo of both of us sitting in the box on the TV, so it's pretty funny, and something that we can laugh about.
That's pretty awesome. So I don't want to take you down too far down the road into hypotheticals, but if the NHL does return, whether we do regular season or right into the playoffs, you know, here in the next couple months or so, what do you think the challenges are that are presented by that? I've heard some guys even say, like, it could be honestly one of the toughest times to win the Stanley Cup because everyone's rested, everyone's healthy, but then conversely, you haven't played in 2, 3, 4 months or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, not playing that long, it definitely brings up some problems, you know, injury and whatnot, just with jumping right back into things. But, even time, like, if we do return, how long it's going to go into the summer, and when will the next season start? And so there's a lot of variables to a lot of things here, and for the next season and when we're going to start. And so everything's just so up in the air right now, and there's so many different variables to how this thing can work out. And so I think moving forward, it's just sort of a day-to-day thing and seeing the rest of the world is reacting to this thing, because you know, there's guys all over the place back home in Europe and in Canada and whatnot. So it's just a figuring out process to try and get everyone back and back playing. So I know everyone wants to play and finish out this season, because obviously it's a big season and nobody doesn't want to play. And so I think hearing the rumblings about maybe returning is definitely exciting.
Obviously a lot to figure out on that, and certainly we'll see what comes of that in the coming weeks. All right, Dante, we'll end on this. We had a couple fan questions, actually, that we had asked for. So a few people had some things they wanted to know. So Lauren said, what is your first memory of hockey, either watching or playing? Can you think back to either one of those?
Yeah, I think my very first memory of hockey, from what I can remember, how I started skating was actually rollerblading. My mom and I would walk up to my sister's elementary school, and I would just rollerblade the whole time. And I remember doing that, and then I got put into skating lessons. I was able to jump a year in that, and ever since then, it just kind of took off. The love of the game obviously came from my parents and my grandpa and everything, but if there's a specific hockey memory that I do remember, is my dad taking me to the World Juniors that took place in Vancouver. We went to a couple exhibition games, and it was definitely something that I think I was probably 5 or 6, and I just remember watching Team Canada on the ice, and I remember it being one of the coolest experiences I'd ever experienced as a young kid, so I think that was definitely it.
All right, this one's similar. David wants to know, what's your favorite moment in the NHL so far? I have a guess for your answer here, but I'm curious.
Favorite moment? I would say I got a couple. I think either scoring my first goal or that Winter Classic game. I think that's definitely a pretty big pinnacle to hit, and extremely exciting game, obviously, with the amount of fans that were there and the stage you're on. It was pretty surreal, and I think just being a part of that whole atmosphere was unbelievable. So getting to see all the Preds fans coming out to support was amazing. I couldn't believe how many people came out to the game and supported us. It was unbelievable, and I know every player on the team really appreciated their support.
Okay, John said, what is the thing you miss most about home when you're in Nashville, and then vice versa? So maybe now that you are home, what do you miss most about being in Nashville?
I don't know. I think just hanging out with the team. Getting quarantined with my family and stuck at close quarters, so it's there can be some tension around the house sometimes. But I think just being in the locker room and getting in that routine is definitely the thing I miss most. I think just waking up here every morning, you don't really know what the plan is for the day or whatnot. So I think just the routine of things is what I miss most about Nashville.
And then when you are here in Nashville playing, what do you miss most about Vancouver?
I think just being outside. I feel like Vancouver's got a very outdoorsy place, and lots of things to do: bike riding, hiking, and rollerblading, you name it. So I think just the outside aspect of all the trails and whatnot is something that I miss for sure.
Well, Dante, thanks for doing this. We all miss you back here in Nashville. I'm sure we'll all be very excited when you return, because that means hockey is close. Again, thanks for the time today.
Yeah, thank you. Stay safe, guys.
Thanks, Fabs. Up next, we'll discuss the potential of Philip Tomasino. This is the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming right now on the Game Nashville app. For more about the show, to listen to past episodes, to rate or subscribe, NashvillePredators.com/podcast. For Brooks, I'm Thomas. Thanks for sticking with us.
Good to hear from Dante.
Yes.
It's nice to check in with
the other side of the continent, I do suppose.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you what, when he was talking about going down to the seawall,
yeah,
I mean,
we both put our hands over our
heads. I know we've talked about this before, but Vancouver has got to be probably the best road city in the NHL.
It's got to be up there. I mean, to the point that, like, I would not do this in, I think, maybe just about any other NHL city, but,
yeah.
I rented a bike just so I could go on that seawall.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Yeah. As Hal Gill likes to say, and it always makes me laugh when we're there, it's this. A big night in Vancouver, but first, the Preds play the Canucks.
Yeah.
Get to me every time. Oh, what a spot. Good town. Good chat with Dante Fabro. We also, and we've been speaking with a lot of people on these Zoom calls. It's actually been
like
kind of nice.
Yeah,
we're up to two a week now, just talking with different people in the organization and not only getting their thoughts on what's going on right now, but talking about hockey, the things that we all want to know about. And we spoke with Predators assistant GM Jeff Kelty earlier in the week, and he was asked about Predators prospect Philip Tomasino. So as you'll probably recall, Predators number one draft pick in the first round last year in 2019 in Vancouver, he went on to post 40 goals and 100 points in just 62 games this past season while spending time with both Niagara and Oshawa of the Ontario Hockey League. That point total was good enough to slot for fourth among all skaters in the OHL. So the question has to be asked, is he ready? Could he compete for a spot on the NHL roster? Jeff Kelty says the Preds will always do what's best for a player's development, but he said it is possible that Tomasino could get a look. And remember, you think back to last fall when Tomasino was here for the first time, and David Poile said, yeah, I was pretty darn impressed. I think even at that point, David Poile thought, yeah, he might get a little bit of a longer look coming up.
I think the odds on chance are he does return to the OHL, but even to be having this conversation and to say that it's probably closer to 50-50 than for most prospects his age, that's interesting. And that's very telling to the season that he put forth, for sure. So, yeah, to be able to put up those kind of numbers this early on, again, Kelty was always saying we're going to do what's best for him first, but to be able to say that, yeah, we're going to consider and take a long look at him for this next season, I think is very important. And he also went on to say, Kelty, that is, the Predators more so, and all NHL teams really, under this salary cap era that we live in, you need guys on their entry-level deals with a very low cap hit to be able to help and contribute. We just spoke to one of them, Dante Fabro. For the next few years, he's at a very low dollar value for the Predators, and they're getting top 4 minutes on most nights out of him. So is that an Eli Tolvin? Is that a Rym Pitlick? All right, who are these other guys? Again, Jakob Trenin is an example of a guy this season who's at a low cap hit. Are any of those guys able to give, you know, real NHL value while they're still in that deal? Is Tomasino the next one? I think that's the interesting thing to see as well. But more and more teams are apt to do that because you just can't have a bunch of veterans that you're paying all this money to. And this is a report, so by no means is it confirmed, but Jarmo Kekalainen, the GM of the Blue Jackets, was saying this week that he's already going in preparing for a flat salary cap. Like, he thinks just the way that things have worked out, it's very unlikely. Again, the original projection was a $3-4 million increase probably. So if you're getting a flat cap, that's even more reason that you need some of these younger guys to be able to help you out.
Philip Tomasino too, really good kid, and I look forward to more of his personality getting out there when he does eventually arrive in Nashville full time, which we certainly think will happen at some point. One of the really cool things that you get to do at the draft is, especially from like an all access standpoint. So I was there in Vancouver last year when he was drafted, and when you're a first rounder and in the later round, second round and beyond, there's less fanfare. You still do a lot, but you don't go up on stage. You just kind of go down to the table, shake everyone's hand, and then you move on. But with in the first round, so Tomasino goes up on stage, takes the pictures with management and scouts and everybody who's up there, and then you run through kind of the media gauntlet. So you immediately go to your interview pod and you speak to the media for 5-10 minutes or so, and then you go down kind of to the on the event level of the arena. And I actually got to go through this with him, and it was really the first time that I had gone step by step with a player after the draft. So there's all these different rooms set up, like photographers and video and social media and people from Upper Deck, the trading card company, and you're taking all these photos and doing all these videos. And the one room that was really cool, it was kind of like they were doing video shots of all the players, and they had lights and backdrops and you're wearing your jersey and your hat that you've just gotten from your new team. And there's a guy in there who's, you know, there's a couple people shooting video, and there's a guy in there kind of like, yeah, work it. Like, give us this, like flash us some, you know, some peace signs or flip your hat or whatever. And he was just eating it up. And he was like, like Tomasino actually started being like, oh, you want me to do that? Like, what if I did this? Like, should I do this? Can I do this? Like, he's got his personality. And he was eating that stuff up. And you know, it's kind of the old school mentality that hockey players aren't super flashy. And that's not to say that the guys coming up next are, you know, all about look at me. It still is about the team. But I think they've got a little bit more personality than maybe. It's no slight to some of the veteran players,
right,
but it's just the changing of our culture in general, I think. Yeah. And he's got a great personality, so I can't wait until he starts getting ingrained in this community eventually.
The you telling that story made me think of another behind-the-scenes element from that scenario. When they're walking that gauntlet and going through all the different steps, you mentioned it, the player signed, the autograph, and the player worn.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of a technicality there in one of those sections that always makes me laugh. So, like, again, it's hard to visualize, but just picture, like, 10 hats in a row, and the guy will, like, touch it on his head, touch it on his head, touch it on his head, or he'll have, like, a lanyard, and he'll be, like, over his head, back off, and he'll do, like, 20 in, like, 10 seconds, and you're like, well, it was player worn.
You wore
it. But it's funny that they have to, like, hit those line items in the contract to be, like, okay, and because you just found out that you became a quote-unquote Nashville Predator, like, what, 45 seconds earlier? And then it's like, okay, get the Preds hat, get the Preds jersey, get the lanyard, sign this, get the puck. It's funny to watch how they have to knock it all out so quickly for each of the first-round picks.
Yeah, it was really cool to see that. But, yeah, keep your eye on Philip Tomasino, and we'll see what happens this summer. He's already signed his entry-level deal, too, so that's taken care of.
Yeah, another guy that's done that is Igor Afanasyev, and a big piece of that from this past summer was kind of the conscious decision from the Predators organization to take out P.K. Subban and effectively replace him with Matt Duchene, right? I know it was a trade and then free agency. But there's a lot of pieces that were involved in that P.K. Subban deal that did not make an immediate impact, but very well could in the years to come. Afanasyev is one of them with the second-round pick. And then you also had Jeremy Davies, who was maybe even, from the Predators' perspective, a better prospect than Steven Santini, who, of course, ended up spending a small amount of time with the Preds, but predominantly most of this season with the Milwaukee Admirals. So Kelty also said in his call this past week that Jeremy Davies is a guy that they've really seen a lot of growth from, and they've liked what they've seen out of him this past season as well. So again, just for quote-unquote getting, and I've said that 100 times this segment, but getting rid of P.K. Subban to get a Davies, to get an Afanasyev that you're really proud of so far, I think is very encouraging.
Yeah, they're really high on Jeremy Davies as a defensive prospect, maybe in a couple of years seeing him in a full-time role. I asked Kelty as well if there's anyone else we're not really thinking of that you're pretty excited about. He listed Rem Pitlick and Ellie Tolvin, and those are a couple names that certainly we know as well from Milwaukee who should be, I would say, expected to challenge for roster spots next season. But then he mentioned Alexander Campbell as well, who was a third-round pick last year in 2019, was just named to the first All-USHL team in the United States Hockey League, had a really good season there. He's committed to Clarkson University, and he really impressed with his speed when he was here during development camp and rookie camp in September as well. So Alexander Campbell, another name to watch out for there. But good to talk to Jeff Kelty, and of course they're all still involved in their draft preparations, even though they're not all together. They would typically be having professional scouting or amateur scouting meetings in May. Everyone would come into Nashville. That's probably not going to happen at this point in time, but they're all getting ready, and like we mentioned at the top of the show, if the draft ends up happening in June still, you got to be ready for this sort of thing.
I know. It's very interesting on that point because you just need the final standings. You need to have that draft order. But if you did have that with the NHL so different than the NFL, for example, almost all of these players are not going to immediately come into the league and make an impact. There's almost no reason why you can't go ahead and do the draft virtually. But you're right. But it's having to know what the order is. I'm curious what they decide to do that ultimately.
We shall see. And we will be back in just a moment to wrap things up here on the POP. A couple Twitter questions to get to. That is next right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh my goodness, it's good. Welcome back to the Predators official podcast, ESPN 102.5 The Game. As we wrap things up on episode 83, new music from the 1975. If you follow me on social media, you have undoubtedly seen me post about that song. If you're too shy, let me know. That's all I got to do. Song of the year, the front runner at least.
My gosh.
The front runner. But it's April. There's lots of time.
Hi, my name is Thomas Willis. The movie Parasite was ruined for me because it was overhyped too much before I saw it. Similarly...
Is this what happened to this tune?
It's fine, okay? It's fine. I often tell you, it's fine.
It's fine.
Welcome back to the POP. Let's answer some of your Twitter questions when you use hashtag Brett's podcast. We see them. We're happy to include them in the show. Quickly, on a scheduling note, the Predators have advanced to the second round of the NHL 20 simulated playoffs. By the time you've listened to this, you've probably missed game one. It's Saturday night at 8, but then pretty much every other day there will be a game played. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then I have to be careful about this one because I've promised another team not to announce it yet, but Roman Josi and Nick Bonino will be returning to a Preds NHL Twitch channel near you. Stay tuned for more details.
An exclusive.
Coming up next week. I can't reveal the whole thing.
Who could that mystery team be?
Stay tuned. What will be happening?
Out. And you mentioned the Golden Classics off the top, too, but that's exciting.
Yes. Yeah. So, again, just the wins. So, man, it's going to start fast with Chicago. Games 1, 2, 3, and 4 due to the Preds sweeping. And then, yeah, from then on, it's interesting kind of building that schedule. And I was like, oh, wow. I don't think I remembered this at the time. The Predators only won a single game 5 that whole time. To win 3 playoff rounds and yet not go 1-2 in game 5. Well, interesting.
They didn't even need it in round 1.
Yeah.
They're in 2017. So all the best moments from 2017, again, at Preds NHL on social, will have you posted, keep you posted.
And worth mentioning that those broadcasts, if you're not just in Tennessee, and we know many of you are even around the world that listen to this show, it's an expanded market. So even look out Georgia, the Carolinas, I want to say like, more of them will be able to watch the 2017 games again because they're not current restricted broadcast. Yeah. So
all of Tennessee, look into at Alabama, a local TV Mississippi. Near you.
Yeah.
Yep. Check that out. A couple of questions to get to. This is a good one. I feel like we might have discussed this before, but Rick wanted to know, what is your favorite Preds jersey of all time?
So, good question. I think I am one of those people that ranks the primaries pretty high, but then is always excited, like many fans are, to see the third jersey, the one you don't get that often, right? You're like, oh, we have to wear this jersey all the time. So just by the virtue that it's new, I don't want to be too recency biased, and I'm not picking as my number one, but I do think the Preds Winter Classic jerseys from this year, this season, will go down as one of their best jerseys of all time. I really do think that. And to that end, like, the players think that too as well. I mean, even to back to our earlier point, Roman Josi, when he was playing NHL 20, was like, I'm wearing my Winter Classic jerseys. Like, those things are great. So it's hard to give that as an answer because that only happened like 4 months ago. Man,
Well, your hot take when the new road jerseys first came out.
I do think the Predators' current road jersey is the best road jersey they've ever worn in, what, 22 years. I will stand by that. I still think I'm going to pick a third jersey because it's new and unique. I probably would go with the Navy third jersey, which was worn, what, I don't even know, 2011 to like 2014, 15, something like that. Somewhere around that, just a few years. I guess they would have switched when they went to the gold jerseys in 2011. So it was only a 2 or 3 season run. But they played great in them, and it was just a cool look. Again, I only pick a third jersey like that just because it's new and unique, right? It's too easy to be like, oh, this is the best jersey. I will stand by. I mean, I remember when it first happened as a fan, and I was like, wow, the Predators are like totally switching, and they're going to wear gold, or we all said yellow at the time. I think that was the right call as well. And even you and I, since we've been with the organization, the switch to the gold helmets.
Yeah.
And now you see back a highlight with a Navy helmet, and you're like, oh, ew, actually those weren't as good. You know, you've actually gotten used to the gold helmets too. So
the black and blue third was worn between 2009 and 2011.
Okay. I knew it was at least 11 because I remember Mike Fisher's first ever game against the Avalanche. He wore that third jersey. Yeah.
And one of my favorite jerseys of all time, and I know this is, it's like either love them or you hate them, but I love the mustards.
I was going to say, I am pro mustard as well.
I always love the mustards as a kid.
Very polarizing topic. Those are great jerseys. And it came with a different logo too, which is really cool.
Yeah. As a kid not growing up here, I saw those. I'm like, gosh, those are sick. Yeah. And so there was a team growing up in Pittsburgh. There's a youth team called the Pittsburgh Predators, and their jerseys and uniforms were based off of the Preds.
Ooh.
And so when the mustards came out, the Pittsburgh Predators had like an alternate.
Look at them.
So there were kids that I went to school with who played for the Pittsburgh Predators youth organization and would come to school like wearing their third jersey or their track jacket with the logo on it. And I'm like, gosh, that looks so good.
You were just sitting there. It's like, cool.
Yin's diehard penguin fan.
They're wearing Predators jerseys. Who knew?
Yin's are looking pretty spiffy in those jerseys over there. Yeah, like some hot dog mustard. Anyway.
Anyway.
Well, I don't think I've ever done a Pittsburgh accent on the show before.
Nor had I. Here we go. One more note on that as well. That new kind of cartoonish animated logo on that third mustard jersey. It was going to be the skull that was on the shoulder patch, but the NHL deemed it was like too scary, effectively, like too intense. So they had to move it to the shoulder patch and come up with the new guy. Yeah.
Huh. Fun fact. It's the more you know.
The more you know.
Lauren, and we asked this to Dante as well, but I thought it'd be interesting for us to touch on real quick. Wanted to know, what is your first hockey memory, either watching or playing?
Ooh.
So the first game that I ever remember watching, like legitimately sitting down in front of the TV and watching, was December 27th, 2000. I was in fourth grade. Mario Lemieux coming out of retirement, and the Penguins beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 5-0 that night. And I like to say, for me, that was really the starting point of, man, that was amazing, and I can't get enough hockey, and it's just grown to this point.
Was it 2003 that it was Mighty Ducks Devils in the Stanley Cup final?
Yes.
I remember watching that, but just being like, oh, what hockey? This is weird. For me, I really was the 2003-2004 season for the Predators the first time they made the playoffs. I remember, man, we were sitting at Outback. Game one.
Sitting at Outback.
Game one when the Preds scored their first ever playoff goal, whatever that was. Kirk Johnson scored in like the first minute, I do believe. So got into that playoff series, and I've said this to you. Being a new hockey fan at that point, like I'm grateful that there was a whole lockout for the entire season the very next year. I'm glad I didn't, you know, just say, well, give up on this sport. So yeah. I did hang around long enough.
Well, 02-03 and then 03-04.
Yes, right after that 04 playoff series that I really became a Preds fan, and then they didn't play the next
year. Our president, Sean Henry, won with Tampa Bay.
Yeah. That's true. Oh, yeah, a great seven-game series.
And I was going hard for the Lightning that year, too. Yeah. I was all in on
the
Lightning.
I wanted them to win as well.
That was great.
That's crazy.
And then we were done.
And then look at us now. Yeah, and then the Predators, when they did return, they matched and set their longest winning streak at the time. The 05-06 season with the new rules. They just gotten Paul Kariya. The Predators won their first 8 games of the season. Mm-hmm. That was how hockey returned to Nashville.
Yeah.
Man.
What a
young
start.
Thomas was fired.
What a start. And the Penguins had Sidney Crosby, and I think they lost like their first 10 games that season.
Yeah. And then since then, of course, the Preds just 2 seasons ago set a new record. It's now 10 games is a winning streak in the 17-18 season.
Yeah, that was a fun little look back. Let's take it home, shall we?
Now for Brooks Braddon, if you want to hear more about the 1975, follow his alternate promotional handles at Brooks Braddon on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Tommy Willis. You will not see anything about the 1975 on my social media accounts. Use hashtag Preds Podcast to tweet the show and ask us questions. Make sure you're following at Preds NHL again to check out those NHL 20 streams, amongst a lot of other great content coming up this week. Hey, thanks to Dante Fabro being our first player since the pause to join us back on this show. We do appreciate it. Please rate, subscribe, listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn. NationalPredators.com/podcast is the place to go to get more. We'll talk to you in a week.
See you, friends.